Albania, 1973. On his way to Damascus, suddenly a light from the sky flashed around him, and for 3 days he could not see. Acts 9:9. 93 million miles from the sun, in the damp of a windowless concrete room, in a maze of other rooms and cells and passageways where grace and hope had never touched, the interrogator sat behind a tight wooden table with a mind gone blank as the notepad before him. The prisoner radiated mystery. After 7 days of torture, he had yet to utter a word. Silent, his head bowed down, hands manacled, he stood beneath the blinding grip of the spotlight in the middle of the room, like a barrier to comfort. "Who are you?" The interrogator's voice was straw. All the questions had been asked. None had been answered. Now they all had worn away to the single probe, as if locked within the prisoner's name were his nature. "Who are you?" Drained, the interrogator waited, squinting at the sweat-blurred lines on the pad. In the hush of the chamber, he could hear his own breathing and the desultory, faint, sharp clicks of his pinpoint tapping at the table's stained dark oak. For a moment, his ears twitched up minutely, straining toward a sound heard dimly through the walls, the scuffing of shoes, a body being dragged. He couldn't tell if the sounds were real or imagined. Here even the dust in the air was heard shrieking. Another odd sound intruded. What was it? The interrogator rested his pen on the table and lifted a haunted gaze to the prisoner. Silent and motionless, yet so vivid that he seemed a disturbance embedded in time. Drops of blood were falling softly to the mottled stone floor from the ends of his fingers, now one, now another, where the nails had been wrenched from their sockets. The interrogator shifted his weight uneasily. He looked down at the quiet pen. "Who are you?" The silence held its breath. The interrogator's thumb probed under his spectacles, dislodging them a little as he rubbed at the corner of a watery eye. He carefully removed them and polished each small, round, gold-rimmed lens with a frayed and faded white cotton handkerchief that faintly smelled of naphtha. Finished, he fitted the glasses back on with slender hands the color of parchment, then nodded a command to a burly torturer. "Go ahead," he quietly ordered. The torturer moved to the light, where he paused, gently patted the prisoner's cheek, then suddenly delivered a thudding blow to the prisoner's groin with a rubber truncheon. The prisoner absorbed it, sinking to his knees, but emitting no sound. The interrogator's fingertips touched at a scar that bisected his pale, thin lips like a snarl, and under the collar of his olive-drab coverall that bore no sign of rank, his neck felt strangely warm and taut. Against all reason, the prisoner frightened him. Like the dark and heavy stars that show no color to the far observer, he blazed with a terrifying inner light. They had come upon him by chance. On a Sunday, 25 September, near the northern mountain village of Spock, a force of police, trained dogs, and militia had been hunting a suspect in the attempted assassination of Chief of Security Mehmet Shehu. Shots had been fired by unseen marksmen as Shehu, in the city on a tour of inspection, departed from security police headquarters, then housed in the ancient brownstone prison in that section of Shkodër called Rusi Imat. One man was caught, a peasant from Domni who, under torture, finally implicated a second man from his village, a clothing merchant named Kazim Beg, who was believed to be escaping to Yugoslavia. Hunting parties sped to the routes, considered the likely paths of flight. To the west, the mud-brown River Buna, and north, the so-called Shepherd's Pass, a high coil at the crests of the Dukagini Mountains. Though swollen by unexpected rains, the Buna's roiling, buffeting waters could be crossed at the narrowest pinch of its waist, slightly more than 200 yards. But because it was known to so few Albanians and was close to the suspect's village, the pass drew the larger force of searchers, 58 armed volunteers and 3 dogs. Their climb was daunting, a robber of breath that spiraled through sandstone, marl, and shale to freezing heights of desolation. These were the ranges of the damned. But at the pass, the hunting force found no one, and began a return that would have been without incident, except for a curl of fate that would later be seen as first contact with the prisoner. One of the dogs, a ferocious mastiff of enormous muscle and bulk, had been loose toward a crackling sound in the wood and was later discovered lying still amid gold and orange leaves on the forest floor in autumnal light, as if fallen asleep and turned away from all yearning. Its neck had been broken. The leader of the force, a young smith named Rocco Bay, felt a shadow pass over him at the sight, for he could not grasp the power of a human capable of killing the dog in this way. His breath a white fire on the darkening air, he scanned the wood with narrowed eyes, sifting hawthorn and hazel in search of his fate, and seeing nothing but the cloud that is before man's eyes. The sun was descending. The forest was haunted.